Hey guys, delighted to have Eric Young with me. We've appeared before with Mario and a few others, but Eric, for those that don't know, prodigious stacker, and he is the King Kong with the great gold medallions. He's a great personality on X and many other social platforms, and is an avid watcher and viewer, and I would call him a precious metals intellect, a key person of influence, in fact, in the precious metal space. Eric, delighted to have you with me.
Thank you, Francis. It's a pleasure.
Great. We've got a couple of pre-discussion points that we've almost already sketched out. And what I really like about your input is that you bring the East. So few people, especially in the Western English language speaking media, realize that the big game is moving, the money's moving from East, West to East, my apologies. And there's so many big players and developments. Let's kick off, actually, with some of the news that China and Xi are bringing about with regards to holding and vaulting of gold and developing a trade system that could be backed in yours truly, the precious metals. Because this is a crouching, stalking tiger that ends the paper IOUs game and goes back towards truth and real money. How do you see this working? Explain to us this development.
So the interesting thing that happened, Francis, recently is that the Hong Kong chief executive, that's like the mayor or the in China, he's probably the equivalent of a governor, right? Like if you look at it from a US perspective. Anyway, the chief executive of Hong Kong, John Lee, came out recently. And in September, and said that Hong Kong is going to up its gold vaults to around 2,000 metric tons within 3 years.
Wow.
Okay. And he also mentioned that the Shanghai Gold Exchange is establishing a gold vault in Hong Kong, which we all know because that happened back in June. And you know, he talked about Hong Kong being an offshore location for gold, international gold transactions, and Hong Kong in the future aiming to be a international gold hub. So why is all this important? Because a lot of people just look at this and say, yada, yada, great, right? Like Hong Kong upping gold capacity to 2,000 metric tons. What is it going to do? Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's an interesting fact, but people don't connect what's going on behind the scenes.
Sure.
So what I think is happening, and this is based on my observations in other areas of the system, is that China is in the process of setting up offshore Shanghai Gold Exchange vaults. Okay, physical gold vaults, offshore. So Hong Kong is the first one. Potentially, the next one is going to be Saudi Arabia. Maybe Moscow, New Delhi, Singapore. So all the important trading partners of China, right? They're going to set up a physical gold vault at those locations. So you might ask, or your followers might ask, okay, fine. Why are they doing all that? What is that going to be good for? Well, now, Francis, maybe your viewers don't know about this, but right now, the world, you know, when they conduct international trade between each other, like let's say China with India or India with Australia, sort of thing, right? Buying and selling commodities or finished products, right? 70% of the time, when these trades happen, and they need financing via a repo facility. That's a repurchase agreement to access liquidity from offshore international banks. When they do that, the collateral right now, 70% of the time, is U.S. treasuries. Okay, do you like see a problem there? If like, you know, you're not even two countries who are like no US involved in the middle, right? US is not the country that you're trading with. two countries, non-US countries, trading with each other, but they're using US dollars and or like maybe the local currency, but the collateral that they are using to access liquidity is US Treasury.
Yeah.
That's a big problem, Francis, because the US can potentially just tell these guys that they will just shut them down. They will just not clear the collateral transaction, right? Like, you know, at, let's say in the case of Europe, Clearstream or Fedwire, they can just shut it down for these US adversaries. So in my opinion, and of course, in the opinion of these BRICS countries, this is a structural handicap, or should I say a structural catastrophe waiting to happen for these BRICS countries. So what are they doing instead? Now, looping back to what we said about the Govals, maybe your followers already guessed it, these BRICS countries are most likely thinking of using physical gold in the form of potentially Shanghai Gold Exchange gold warrants as collateral for these repo facilities.
Which does away for the need for holding the debt and the dollar, which is the treasury and the dollar instrument, which go hand in hand, which is a huge unraveling of demand for those assets as collateral as well, isn't it?
Yes, Francis. I mean, like, the one thing that I guess the, you know, milkshake people or people who don't really think much of the BRICS, you know what they always say. They say, well, gold is great, and we might own gold as a hedge for inflation, etc. But there are limited use cases for physical gold. Because physical gold, you know, when measured in fiat currencies, the price fluctuates too much. So we can't do much with it. So other than, you know, a hedge for inflation, right? That's what these people always say. Now, the interesting thing, Francis, with this repo facility, you actually take the price fluctuation of physical gold out of the equation. Now, why do I say that? That's a bold statement, right? The reason why I say that is because of the way repo facilities are structured. Repo facilities are structured in a way that the buyback price in fiat is predetermined. And most of the time, it's overnight anyway. It's like a one-day situation. So when you have that kind of secure loan in a form of repo facilities, you take the fiat price fluctuation of the physical gold out of the equation. Isn't that wonderful? Now you have a new, brand new use case for physical gold in a, you know, that is essentially the bedrock of the Eurodollar system. And you're taking, potentially going to be taking half of that.
Yeah.
And sucking it into physical gold.
And do you think in terms of this establishment of network of vaults, that they can only really do it in trusted nations that have come on board? Because you can't see, given that they seized Russia's treasuries, $300 billion worth through the SWIFT system, etc. So the Western decay is no in their systems is no longer agnostic, it's politicized. So there's no way that you would build a vault as China in America on the basis of this. So it's going to be something for partners for which they would not antagonize China and or the major BRIC nations, because some of these will be geographically, obviously, in other countries. We've mentioned Saudi and all of them. I think they'd all play along because they want the alternative. They want the better money that is properly collateralized, etc. But it will mean that we have a bifurcation of the system that wouldn't extend to Western nations. They're not about to put one in London or Europe, let's say, even if we keep America out of this. It's going to mean there's two parallel universes, a collapsing West that is still going to be in a treasury dollar. You mentioned the Eurodollar system, and then the East. What about the trade in between that's still continuing? I mean, China is still selling goods, record deficits, trade deficits, the Americans with China. they're going to, what system does that play on? Does it still play on the legacy system and China does away with those treasuries and dollars and treats them as good, you know, not really wanted currency that they receive for their production, for their productive goods, and turns it into gold and silver, etc.? How do you see the two halves of the feuding bifurcation in the trade game?
So I think that's a very good question, Francis. I think initially it'll be two parallel systems. You have the gold warrants as repo collateral on one side for the BRICS. On the other side, you have US treasuries. So that will go on for a while. As the you know, gold warrants on the BRICS side picks up steam, I see that in order for the West to work with the BRICS, the Chinese, the Russians, and the rest of the BRICS, they will have to implement a system of gold treasury bonds, so gold bonds.
Hmm.
That's why I believe people like Judy Shelton have been talking about gold bonds for the last couple of years, because eventually, if you want to plug in to the rest of the world, meaning like if you're a Western country, you want to work with these commodity producers, you need some sort of a gold bond that can plug into that system.
And which, then entails the, which entails vaulting in your own country of gold for trade settlement or securitization for warrant issuance and things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, that part is simple, right? Yes.
And auditing of those vaults as well, I want to add, and the transparency on what's actually held. Because we also have the unanswered question regarding the mystery on Fort Knox and the lack of auditing. Sorry, I jumped in there, but carry on.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that these Shanghai Gold Exchange vaults are going to contain assayed gold that are verified by the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and anybody within, like, you know, BRICS member countries or global South countries should be able to go in to verify and audit this gold. And your concern earlier about, you know, maybe offshore countries with these SG vaults keeping too much gold. My belief is that whatever gold that is at least satellite Shanghai Gold Exchange vaults offshore, that gold is going to be proportional to the trade flow, okay, of that particular country has with China. So you're not going to just keep a whole bunch of gold there for no reason. It's going to be in direct proportion to whatever trade that you're doing with China and other BRICS countries.
Yeah.
So that's the way I see it.
If you're like America and a deficit running nation, you're going to have to keep adding gold to that vault as more of that gold needs greater collateralization against the fact that you are run red on your trade deficits.
Absolutely. And by the way, that gold, like, you know, all over the world, at all the Shanghai Gold Exchange vaults, are going to be managed with a centralized ledger that the Chinese and the BRICS member countries can all look into, can all monitor. Now, one thing that is interesting, Francis, this came across my desk today. Like, this is a piece of news from Friday, and it has everything to do with what we're talking about today, okay? This is from Gold Telegraph. It's an account on X, pretty big account for gold and silver stackers. Anyway, Russia's finance minister says that Russia and China are working to set up securities depository to rival Belgian-based Euroclear and Clearstream. Think about that, Francis. I mean, like, Clearstream and Fedwire right now are the primary, you know, clearing locations for U.S. treasuries. Now, if Russia and China are saying that they're making, like, you know, implementing a rifle to that, essentially, they are saying what, like, they're agreeing with what I'm talking about on the show. They are setting up, you know, first they're setting up the vaults. Then they are, you know, getting a whole bunch of physical gold out from the SG and parking it at the SHFE, okay? Which is, I think it is now at 70 metric tons now. eventually that gold is going to be, I believe, going to be shipped to Hong Kong to the SGE vault. And now they're saying they're setting up a rifle depository or clearinghouse to Euroclear and Clearstream.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, things are accelerating. Yeah.
We're talking about the full development, alpha to omega, full scale parallel system that can operate entirely remotely of Europe or the US or the Western nations for that matter, which goes from New Zealand, Canada, Australia as well, Commonwealth, UK. So that's an incredible system that will actually give quite a higher level of confidence also in trade. And the other key part about they don't have to kill the other system. They can set up and say, hey, we just want our own independent system. But the process of doing that and acquiring gold means they the early buyers of gold. The others that later want to plug in are going to have to buy gold, but higher up. And at the same time, that's money that's not going into dollar and treasury, which is causing a further deficit at a time that America is in a parabola of issuance. They issued $550 billion in the last 30 days. That's more than half a trillion. So you're actually removing buyers from the room. They just have to wait for the US dollar debt system to finish dying, really, don't they? And then it becomes the only system, or certainly the scaled, trusted system in an environment where you're going to have chronic stagflation. It's a death knell just by virtue of its existence, isn't it?
Absolutely, Francis. I think, like I said, initially, it's going to be two parallel systems. And then down the road, it's going to be whichever system that is more trustworthy, that is more neutral.
And I know where I'm putting my money. Yeah. And I think just the establishment of the one is going to be an acceleration of the decline in the other. Just by virtue of where once they had 100% support, reducing that degree of support even marginally is already a problem. It's mathematically doomed to fail already, but that's just going to accelerate things. We also mentioned India. And India was a fence sitter that kind of liked to talk and chat and keep good with America because America was doing Muslim bad on Pakistan, which is a rival and enemy. There's been a pivot and a twist here. Take us into the weeds there and what it means and why it's important.
So first of all, I saw a report today telling me that, telling us that India doubled its purchasing of physical gold and silver in September.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, like, we're at all-time highs right now for gold, and silver is getting back to its all-time highs of $50, US dollars per troy ounce. And India is double downing on both gold and silver. Now, I posted something on my X account. I said,
which also, for those that are not watching, sorry again to just fire a quick shot in there, is something China has been doing and saying to its population to do, gold and silver and added silver. And now you're getting India doing a similar vibe, certainly at their central bank level and probably to follow their cultural tendency anyway to buy precious metals. Sorry. So I just thought, it's a synchronization with the China strategy as well, isn't it?
Yes. So, you know, for the longest time, I think, like you said, Francis, India has been a fence sitter. It's sitting on the fence seeing, you know, what it can get out of the US. If the Americans would work with India against potentially China, Russia, etc. But then, Trump came out and said, sorry, India, we're going to slap a lot of tariffs on you guys. Because you guys are buying Russian oil. Oh, so Donald Trump is saying either you cut off all your Russian oil, which is, by the way, Francis, that's like a death knell to India. If India start buying cheap Russian oil, that's going to just, India is going to be in chaos.
And if I can just interject again, growing economies consume energy. That's why Eric is saying that, big time. Big population economies must produce growth. And they need the growth to keep their citizens happy. And it's a function of this. All growing economies consume more energy. Sorry, carry on.
So after that happened, Francis, the India finance minister came out and said that India is diversifying away from, guess what? U.S. treasuries. Isn't that crazy? That's like a U.S. ally, India. It's saying that to Uncle Sam, fine, you guys want to play rough? Buy U.S. Treasury. We're going to, guess what? Physical gold and potentially silver and other commodities.
And okay. I would say, so, if I could comment, for just again, to keep us a discussion more than an interview, what Biden did pushing Russia into China's hands, ref the seizure of the money, Trump is effectively doing with India into the BRICS and making the decision, you're not a fence sitter anymore. You're on the other side with those tariffs levy. Isn't it that case? Almost. That the America is helping sink the dollar and the treasury system through their own actions.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, Francis. And I said, I actually posted something on Red Notes. I have a new account on Red Notes. It's KingKong9888. It's the same as my X account handle. Anyway, so I posted this and people
read it. Red Notes is Chinese X, for those of you that don't know. Am I correct? Yeah.
So I basically said, like, you know, if China and Russia and some of the leading BRICS countries want all these global South BRICS countries to band together and make this work, there has to be three things that happen. Number one, we talked about already, which is the offshore vault, gold vault, right? Because you can't have a international, you know, high liquid quality asset collateral that is within China's borders, right? Because China has capital controls, for one thing. And of course, all these global South countries want to have assurances if they are jumping out of U.S. treasuries. So that offshore vault thing is the number one criteria, which they are doing. Number two, which concerns India, what we're talking about here, is that China has to make assurances to the global South countries, including India, that the prices of commodities and silver are no longer going to be suppressed. Now, why do I say that? Because for the longest time, as we know, Francis, the prices of commodities and silver had been suppressed by the Western countries. And also China, because China has been the world's, you know, factory, right? To manufacture all this stuff using the commodities and silver. Now, Hosa Sultan have explained that in the past, the Western countries would suppress the price of silver and commodities, working with the bullion banks and LBMA and COMEX, the usual suspects, essentially.
Yes, economic hitmen in Africa.
Exactly. That's what it says. Suppress the price of these commodities so that, like, you know, ex-colonies, you know, they survive, but they don't thrive really, right? And all the profit goes into the companies that design the products, that use the commodities to manufacture the final products, which are the Western countries' companies. So
that exactly what we do to our farmers with supermarket chains? And it's the same model for people that understand. The originator gets very little, and many are crashing and burning in the farming. But the supermarket mega chains, the Walmarts in the United States, all of this, they flourish and have all the pricing power. They're doing this. They've been doing this to Africa particularly, but commodity producers, India, you would argue, Russia, certainly on the energy front and all of this. And this is the theme of a major commodity revolution. But first, we have the primary commodity, which is that this is a reserve asset failure going on in the dollar and everything else, which is why this starts in precious metals, but it doesn't end in precious metals. You're going to be taking your wealth that you'll make in precious metals, and you'll be enjoying a second stage run, which probably already would have started, but will be behind, in energies, sugars, cocos, coffee beans, you name it. Sorry, I want to put that in there because it's so interesting what you're saying. Carry on, Eric.
Yeah, so the second assurance, like I said, is that China and Russia to tell all these commodity-producing countries, global South countries, that they are no longer going to suppress the price of silver and the commodities. That's why you see the prices of silver and commodities breaking out right now.
Yeah.
It's a factor. Like, I mean, Exactly. We're moving into a new system or a new parallel system to the U.S. Treasury, you know, old colonial system, right? That's what's happening. And the third promise that China had to make and has to demonstrate to the rest of, to the BRICS countries and the global South countries that it will do and can do is that China has to be able to manufacture and design semiconductors and high-tech equipment at the same level as the West, so that if the Western countries, let's say, they don't like, I don't know, like Sri Lanka, or like they don't like Brazil, right? They cut them off of technology. These countries are not going to go back to the Stone Ages because they have an alternative of where they can buy high tech, and that country is China. That's why we see what's happening right now happening because China recently demonstrated to all these partner countries that it can pre-fall in the semiconductor front, AI, EV, and everything else that the Western countries are doing and making in terms of high tech. So these are the three legs, three promises, okay? Three things that have to happen before we can cross into a new system.
Yeah.
And it's all happening, Francis. It's all happening.
And just to build on your point, you're talking about America, which runs deficits with the major EU bloc and with China at record levels at the moment, trade deficits, and previously was allowed to throw IOUs, dollar USTs, back at the people as assets, which is now such an underperforming asset. We had the 55% collapse, and there's more to come in terms of the debt markets in due time. And you've had the currency depreciation now, which goes hand in hand with the debt depreciation, with the dollar being the worst performer of the year to date. And what that actually means is the importing of inflation for America, the biggest lie. So we finished saying for 3 years that the biggest lie was the labor number. From we started saying that under Biden and Yellen, and it's now being totally unraveled, and everybody's accepted that what we were saying 3 years ago is now true. There was no strong economy. He was hiring government workers or contractors to government that were exclusively reliant on government. And there was other overstatements of the birth-death model. That was the last lie in America's statistics, because everyone thinks in the Western world, China is full of propaganda on all the economic money. America's kind of is honest just with the occasional slip up. It's actually almost the other way around in some senses. The current lie is CPI that's going to be exposed. I'm saying it now, the real CPI, we'll have a moment of truth like we had on labor stats. Your currency is devaluing in the US. The commodity prices that have been suppressed artificially are going to start having more price discovery, not just in metals, base metals, precious metals, but in commodities generally. And what you're going to discover is you're going to have a fiat debasement simultaneous to in other currencies, you're going to have commodities going up. In dollar terms, it's going to rocket up. Imagine the cost of living when America no longer has a bottomless overdraft to throw IOUs in the opposite direction when they're taking goods from the rest of the world for Americans. How far does the dollar need to collapse where they actually have a zero deficit stroke trade balance, which is kind of where they are, where they actually are producing things people want that actually sell offshore, and they are reduce their imports to such a degree that they actually reach a point of balance. That's how far the dollar has to drop in an environment where commodities are going to go up in euros and yuan on its own for a price discovery mechanism. Imagine how that moves in a depreciating dollar. And this is why I say it's hellfire storm coming for Americans. They will fall from the fallest ladder. Do you concur with that? Am I right in talking about hegemony falls highest? Because we get so much cope out of some of the people you've mentioned about, yeah, but euro's wrecked and China has a debt problem, you know, property markets or demographics. They failed their math test with 20%. And they're now saying, yeah, but there's a stupider guy who got a lower score than me somewhere over there, maybe over here, maybe over there. It feels like cope. What's your take on that scenario I sketched?
My take is this, Francis. If there's a liquidity squeeze right now in US dollars, there's a high probability that we're going to see, you know, maybe not as severe, but something similar to what happened in March 2020. Okay? Simply because, like, you know, what we've been talking about the entire show today, they're getting ready to switch over to a new system, or like have a new system run in parallel to the U.S. Treasury, U.S. dollar system. But it's just in its infancy. It's in the beginning of it, right? So if a liquidity crisis hit us right now, there's a big chance that, you know, that what happened in 2020 is going to repeat. Maybe a lesser scale. I don't know how severe it's going to be, right? But
you're referring to some crisis event, either war escalation or lockdown or climate, whatever, something.
Yeah, something that, you know, kicks it off, right? Or like a repo crisis, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't think that will happen, because now they have, you know, ways that these commercial banks in the U.S. can borrow directly from the Fed. That will you know, kind of like sidestep that, right? So anyway, if there's a liquidity squeeze, maybe that's going to happen. But let's say they drag this thing on for a couple of years, and what we talked about in this show picks up steam, or just let's say it takes 20% of the market share away from U.S. Treasuries for these international offshore repos. Let's just say that, right? And then there's a liquidity squeeze that happens at that point. Well, then I think potentially we're just going to see the U.S. dollar crumble compared to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Because now you have an alternative system where, you know, they can operate
higher without
the use of U.S. dollars. Exactly. They don't need to use U.S. dollars or U.S. Treasury collateral, right? So they're insulated from that liquidity squeeze, theoretically speaking. So that's what I see here, right? Yeah.
No, that's fascinating. And going back, we didn't really fully finish the India thing. The conclusion you and I are come to is India's gone from riding both horses, fence sitting, to quite clearly being ushered deeply into the BRICS camp and committing more fully.
Absolutely, because they have no choice, Francis. They have no choice. It's a no-brainer. They have to do this.
And we have a cultural buyer of gold, one of the largest culturally, now turning into a massive buyer of gold and silver for affordability reasons as well, and also opting into the infrastructural vaulting system that is being proposed by China and Russia in terms of trade settlement as a system, which means which then dovetails with the key point you made. They are distributing their treasuries as well and going to cease to be any form of buyer as well, which is already a tip away from supporting the treasury market. Another shoe not supporting the treasury debt market. Anything else you would say on the whole India Volta fuss, you know, the turning to his new friends?
I think the key, Francis, like I said, is that you know, if the world, I'm talking about the BRICS, India, Russia, China, the global south, if they continue to rely on U.S. Treasury bonds as collateral, or bills or notes, whatever, U.S. Treasuries, like I said, this is a structural risk, right? It's a catastrophic structural risk that they cannot ignore anymore.
Yeah,
and that's really saying that's the bottom line. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not ignoring it, and they're building their alternative system. That, I think, is not even under question. Let's talk a little bit and turn to the fact, and an interesting fact. And thanks to you, someone like you, and there's another Chinese gentleman who speaks in Chinese, but I get the translation and occasionally tweets on X in English, highlighting recently that we now have a diverging, this was something I predicted about a decade ago. I didn't predict it like this, though. We have a different dollar-based price in China for an ounce of silver, hitting highs of 53 plus and some cents, whilst we're sitting at 47s, and actually we traded a bit down today. Now I think we're in the 46s right now. It doesn't matter exactly. I'll confirm later. So we actually have, outside of the delivery and the insurance cost of physical across the geography, we actually have an arbitrage two-tier market system. I thought it would come in the physical price versus the paper price, given the derivative manipulation. And I hadn't yet extended it, that theory, or I don't recall extending it geographically. But we now have a two-tier pricing system in silver. Talk us about that and the price to cover. And where's the greater trade? And in my opinion and your opinion, which one wins out as the true price for an ounce of silver?
So, you know, I think the price that you talked about, Franz, is the SHFE, the Shanghai Futures Exchange silver price. The Shanghai Gold Exchange silver price, which is the preferred mechanism for physical delivery, is a little bit lower. It's like, I think, you know, $51 or $49. I haven't checked today, but basically it's slightly lower than the Shanghai Future Exchange silver price. But either way, it's still higher than the Western silver price.
Yeah.
Either way, right? So China, you know, the SGE, like I said, is the preferred you know, physical delivery mechanism for physical silver in China, constantly have around 2,000 to 3,000 metric tons of physical silver in this vault. So it's like a revolving door, because China, like I said earlier in your program, is a big consumer of physical silver for its industrial manufacturing products.
Yeah,
they make parts out of it, right? So that's why you know, the SG is a revolving door. Stuff comes in, it goes out. Stuff comes in, it goes out. And in terms of the disparity with the price, silver price of LBMA, let's say, or the COMEX, you know, for all we know, Francis, like people are probably buying that Western silver, and they are, you know, when arbitrage is big enough, they are probably shipping it to China and India. It's very possible. And as a matter of fact, I think, you know, good fellow Andrew McGuire have been reporting that. It's been saying that, you know, authorized participants have been taking delivery of physical silver at both the LBMA and the COMEX and shipping that stuff off to China and India because of the arbitrage.
And again, it's real money going from west to east, isn't it? Because one country, one segment of the globe appreciates the sound money and the reestablishment of faith. And the other one is at the tail end of paper IOUs in a failing fiat debt system. And the other thing I highlight that many don't get is that previous hegemonies, the last one with the British Empire handing over to America, was actually a friendly affair in a sort of, okay, become the junior partner and you can still hang about. And even still, for Britain, they were the sick man of Europe for decades, paying off the Marshall Plan or for the war borrowings. I'm sure the British people are real glad for that, the Ursary extractors and the interest rates that they paid for having planes shot out the sky that they paid for. And how necessary that war was or not. But anyway, they also, growth-wise, they had lots of tax to pay and very little in infrastructure, very little coming back at them. And they had austerity for decades. It was 60s, 70s. Then they had a Labour government. They had the three-day working week, a complete crisis. They had to throw them out. Then Thatcher came in. And it was only at the tail end of Thatcherism that you got the boom and you got release, a degree of release. How bad is it if it's an antagonistic end of a hegemony to an alternative system that is reverting closer to backed and sound money? Is it an experience like what the British had, or is it going to be potentially a harder fall? What's your take? Guessing, future?
I think from my assessment of Donald Trump, you know, of them trying to just put a Band-Aid on, like, you know, whatever gaping wound that they find along the way. I think, essentially, I think if nothing. If I'm gonna say this, hopefully, your videos still get a lot of views. I don't know, right? But if let's say Israel,
it really
don't step in. Israel don't step in, and tell Donald Trump what to do, or like, you know, pressure the U.S. to go total war with the rest of the world. I think it's possible that what we talked about on this show, which is a parallel system to the U.S. Treasury, U.S. dollar system out there, I think it's possible that this parallel system may be established and take off as an alternative to, you know, the U.S. dollar, U.S. Treasury system.
Very rapidly.
That's in place right now.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's why I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. Any other points that you've spotted, little points of interest, news you think the listeners might be interested in hearing? What I also like about your profile is you have that eyeball on the other side of the planet. We don't get what's going on in China. The Westerners don't get. They get some propagandized version of China. China only lies about its numbers. It's all communism. They don't see the production miracle. They don't see the automation of factories to the same degree. They don't get the positive news. It's not paid for it. I used to, you know, take on, I think, that gentleman you were mentioning quite often. It was always a China wrecked story and a USA type thing. And actually, I'm not wanting the collapse of America. I'm not. I've just got to call COPE out wherever it is that you're in a mathematically certain state of failure there, and it's not a friendly one that you're going down. You're going down swinging. And when you're on the ground in any brawl, then you start to get kicked. It's a very difficult journey path to walk as a nation, the tail end of empire and superpowerdom into something more multipolar. Is that your take? Am I right? What should an American do watching this program? Because it sounds like, you know, it's just like we hate on them. We don't. What should they be considering leaving their country? Should they be considering, apart from stacking, how would you counsel on a non-advisory basis? What's our take of what someone should do is just born on the wrong side of the fence at the wrong time?
Well, first of all, I would stack gold and silver, which a lot of them, I guess some of them, not all of them, are doing. But that's a good start, is to stack gold and silver. And some of them come to me and say that they are not only stacking gold and silver, they're also stacking, like, ammunition.
Bullets.
In case all hell breaks. Bullets, exactly, right? It's not something that is unwise. I think it's wise to have that as a fallback if it comes to that. And some of them asked me if they should go to Thailand, for example, to retire. That's a possibility, right? There are many ways you can protect yourself from a possible upheaval that is coming our way. So I think everybody have to determine, you know, what they are financially capable to do in this juncture to protect themselves.
Yeah, but it's such a rapid, it's going to be, I fear that this is going to be economic case history we haven't seen in the empire collapse. And the downdraft is so brutal that even if you're talented and you're capable and you're full of energy, the environment that you would have to operate in is going to change so drastically for the worse. And, you know, even if you're making a great product and you've designed the best widget, but you're in a population of people that have never had, whose cost of living has rocketed on every level for commodities, for a devaluing currency and all of this, that you'd have to be very niche and only to the high net worth market and to gold and silver stackers maybe as a product. And not everybody can be in that space. I just have immense concern for the average layman American person. I have the same concern for the rest of the West, and I say the same things for them, but the worst in terms to come is America. And that's why I sometimes get agitated by the same people that maybe agitate you, in that they are muting our messages and trying to counter our messages of deep, deep decision tree coming that they should make. Because I actually think you'd be better served the Thailand option, the Malaysia, the Indonesia, the better demographics. You're paying for boomers. They're reneging. If we think about, where do you think in terms of the unfunded liabilities? So everyone says Japan's interesting discussion as well. Japan's the most indebted. We're not as bad as Japan. No, that's not in fact true. Add in all the unfunded liabilities and put it into America's percentage. Add all the unfunded liabilities in Japan and put it into the Japanese percentage. You get to around 325% on Japan, who's about 275 in normal funds. On the US, you get anywhere between 450 and 700%. They are going to have to renege on their contract on welfare, Medicare, Medicaid, and all of this. Or they're going to have to lose a lot of pensioners. They've tried a little bit of that, in my opinion, already. It's a mathematical certainty. And I'm just curious, where do you see that? I mean, it's unsustainable, surely. It's another part.
Like you said, Francis, they will have to restructure their social security system and their medical care system. Is like you said, it's unsustainable. How are they going to pay for all that? Given that the rest of the world is pulling the plug, essentially, if they are not willing to buy additional amounts of U.S. treasuries to fund the U.S. government. So I think something is going to happen. Hopefully not another COVID, because some people, the conspiracy theorists, tell me that COVID happened because it got rid of a bunch of those guys, so that the U.S. government don't need to pay all that money.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully that's not the case and that's not going to happen again. And
can I jack in on the COVID?
Yes.
You know what other thing, the event of COVID did that people don't talk about enough, and it goes back to our 2020 call. It escalated, rushed, and finished the bond market, which is why we're now in this state rather than the state we were in after 2007 and 8. It broke the bond market with that print on debt issuance. And that is, they're living with the consequence. Everyone's thinking about the headcount, the culling. It's a good point. But also, it's brought about the death knell of the debt market, and which is goes hand in hand with the currency as well.
Francis, they added like $10 trillion in debt during COVID. Like, and then now I think they're adding a trillion every less, probably around 60 days. They're adding trillion.
Yep.
It's crazy. So there you have it.
Unsustainable. Everything that is unsustainable on a per. And the other point I would love to have your take on that I've had to deal with, and I know how I've handled it. I'm curious, maybe you have a different take. Everybody thinks they've got this ace in the hole, this superhero trick. And the popular one being doing the rounds at the moment is, no, but Tether, the stable coin, is a buyer of Treasury. It's actually 18th or 12th now, I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, when they pump up the crypto markets, which all has to go via stable coin before it buys Bitcoin, Ethereum, Lumen, whatever going on, that they're going to set up a status, that this is the Trump's 5D genius move, and that they're going to turn into this major whale buying collateral in U.S. debt. What's your response to people that throw down that narrative?
So that's an interesting one, because I did some deep dive research into that, and this is what I found. That was pretty diabolical. I mean, like, you're going to hear from me now. Your audience is going to hear from me now. And this is what it is, right? So you have all these stable coins. Private stable coins that I think what Donald Trump is going to do is to force the stable coins to buy a certain amount of U.S. Treasury bonds, bills, and notes as their backup, as basically the underlying asset to prop up these stable coins. Now that we know that, right? Like that have been talked about for ages. But what is interesting, I think, is the use cases of these stablecoins. So in the past, these stablecoins are just used to buy, shitcoins, Bitcoin, whatever crypto that is hot right now, people would use the stable coins to buy that crypto or the Bitcoin. So that's one use case. What I see that might happen going forward, so that the US government can proliferate or expand the use cases of these stable coins, is potentially force tech giants, like, let's say, Meta, which is the parent company for Facebook, companies like X with Grok maybe in the future, and ChatGPT, which is owned by Microsoft, etc. So all these tech giants are going, when they issue the stable coins, which is being discussed right now, they are going to, of course, buy US treasuries, and at the same time, they're going to force all the consumers all over the world. So let's say I'm sitting in Hong Kong or Bangkok, I want to use ChatGPT. I have to convert the US dollar that I have in my hand to the stablecoin. So you see how this is a new way for them to force people to recycle US dollars into US treasuries via the stablecoin. This is totally diabolical. Somebody figured it out, and I read it, and I was shocked. But I think that's the route they're going to take. They're going to try to get the entire world to be the bag holder for US treasuries. Of US treasuries. Back holder of US treasuries by forcing them to use these stable coins, like tokens, to access US technology.
Yeah. So inherently, because at the moment, the dollar is the other half of the US, the money borrowed into existence, they're going to recycle the dollar back into the debt instrument by making the tethers of this world, the USDCs and all of that, a de facto standard of internet money, which will then see a certain percentage, at least, of collateral going into treasury bills, making a higher purchase demand on the treasury bills as a buyer for utilizing the digital currency, is what you're saying. If I've understood.
But what I'm saying is that the use cases are going to be expanded exponentially, because they're going to force the tech giants that offer, you know, digital services globally to use, these stable coins.
And even offshore, like, so that even you and I paying each other, offshore. That we're even supporting the treasury market, even though we're not in America, we're not Americans, etc. By proliferation of the CBDC in the dollar, you create greater support for the collateral, the needed collateral, and the circulation by suppressing the old dollar for the new CBDC dollar. My only point when I was put by this is that I point to the numbers, and that the degree of debt issuance is $550 billion in the last 30 days. And if you look at how much they bought in collateral, Tether, the biggest one so far, the oldest, biggest one, 2014 to today, they bought $127 billion in collateral. And
yeah, but you're talking,
in
you're
30 about... days, you've done 550, yes, which is more than 4x that. It's 4.3 times in just 30 days. And my argument is you can't chase a parabola starting from naught when it's already got its running shoes on and is now the snowball heading down the mountain. So to me, it's too little, too late, and an act of futility, because we're on such a scale of debt that we're borrowing to pay the interest on the debt. It's the compounding interest equation that's now been allowed to get too big. It's like the emperor who asked for double the rice on each chessboard. It's all the kingdom's rice is already going to this one person now, just in terms of meeting interest payment. So I don't see it as being successful, but I see it certainly as a great way to get CBDCs out there, and turn the stable coins into that Trojan, I suppose, CBDC.
I was just gonna say, Francis, that like the Tether situation that you mentioned, that's just like for right now, the single use case is just for people to convert the US dollars into USDTC or whatever you call it, Tether, yeah. Right? That they can use to get into the crypto casino. That's it. That's the single use case, right? But down the road, if they force the tech giants to, let's say I'm in Hong Kong right now. I'm using Google's services for email, right? I pay them not in Hong Kong dollars, Francis. They take US dollars from me. Okay. Yeah. So I have to convert my Hong Kong dollars to US dollars and then pay Google, right? Okay. In the future, what's going to happen? I convert my Hong Kong dollars to US dollars and then I take my US dollars. I have to buy the stablecoin, whatever Google stablecoin is going to be, right? Yeah. And then Google is going to take that stablecoin and buy US treasuries or that US dollar that they got from me, right? For that stablecoin. They're going to take that US dollar and buy US treasuries, right? So what I'm saying is that right now, yes, you know, it might not be a big thing because the only use case for these stable coins are to gamble in the crypto casino. But down the road, if they shove it down our throats, I don't know how big it's going to be. Because they're going to force the entire world to be backholders.
That brings us full circle back as we are finishing this interview to our original duality of two systems. So if they go that way and that's their system, they will have a money that's backed by a depreciating debt instrument. And the Eastern world will have the alternative, which has collateralized gold in some form in various vaulting outside of just being China in different jurisdictions and gold. And eventually, I can't see the collateral of treasuries holding out. And by the way, they can't have 100% collateral in treasuries. The Tether's already started speaking about wanting silver miners, never mind gold or silver, silver miners for collateral, because it's collateral that it bought in treasuries is no longer backed and they need new money and they're looking to do a capital raise. Part and parcel due to the fact that they chose an absolutely crap asset class that's lost 55% of its value in the first instance. So I think it's lame duck in the water, but you maintain there's possibility they might get just by force of leverage. I mean, it's also a possible reason why Facebook had Libra killed by the government, because they need Facebook, as you've just described, to be an issue of the nation state dollar system not having their own money system, because they've already been earmarked for the future to be, listen, you want to do Facebook advertising, you've got to buy stablecoin XYZ and all of that. But just your final thoughts on this beautiful loop of how we're coming back to two alternative systems and which one has our trust and faith and which one can be rammed down your throat, even if it doesn't have your trust or faith. How's this all play out? What's your final comment on that?
I think, like I said, Francis, if we don't have a world war, like a thermonuclear world war, I think eventually at least the global south countries and the BRICS countries are going to choose the physical gold as collateral system. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Yeah. It will just happen. So I'll just leave you with that and your audience with that. I think that is going to happen. We just need to wait and see and watch it happen. That's it.
And lots of tricks will be tried that no one should be buying into in terms of the fractional reserve paper guys. Eric, this has been absolutely fascinating chat. I've really enjoyed your company. How should people engage and get more regular updates from you, which are generally typically awesome and punchy and no BS? How would you like, where do you want to send them?
Well, people can find me, Francis, on my X account and also Red Note at King Kong 9888. That's my account on X and Red Note.
Excellent. And Red Note is the Chinese version of Twitter, am I correct, if I put it like that?
Yes.
Will they be able to translate? Is there good access for the most of the channel are English viewers, English language speakers? Will they be able to get a translation of that which is being discussed there on Red Note?
Yeah, they can. There's a automatic translation button. You push it, it'll be in English.
Perfect.
But I just repeat the same thing. Basically, I take what I say on
Oh, gotcha.
X and I port it over to RedNotes. So they
Okay.
just see what I have to say on X.
Brilliant.
That's it.
Excellent. I want to thank you for your time, and it's been great chatting, and I look forward to when we next engage. You have a great evening, Eric. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francis. Have a nice day.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us on the link below.